Did you have a chance to watch the episode?
I did.
What'd you think?
I did not hate it as much as I expected to.
Ancient tools and burials, plants and seeds, Neanderthals. All these things we make no apology, are the study of archaeology. But we don't do dinosaurs. No, we don't.
You're listening to the Archaeological Fantasies Podcast, a critical examination of the world of pseudo-archaeology and the misrepresentation of archaeology in the world today. Each episode, we focus the lens of archaeology on a topic and discuss reality versus fantasy. We've covered everything from ancient aliens to crystal skulls, from DNA to modern fakes. Join us for our discussion this week, and get ready to think critically.
Digging in a trench, monuments, going to the pub when the day is spent.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Archaeological Fantasies Podcast. I am your host, Sarah, and I am joined today with Chelsea Slotin. And Chelsea, I don't think you've ever been on the show before, but you are one of the hosts of the Women in Archaeology podcast.
Yes, both of those facts are correct. I'm actually really excited to be on this podcast.
Yeah, I just realized I've done podcasts with you before, but I've never had you on my show. So you work out of the Smithsonian, yes?
Kind of. So I'm a PhD student at American University. I'm a PhD candidate, actually, because I am ABD. Prior to leaving to undertake my dissertation research, I was a contractor at the Smithsonian, but to be clear, nothing that I'm about to say reflects them or their opinions in any way.
It also doesn't reflect your school.
Yes.
But so tell us, we brought Chelsea onto the show for a reason, and that reason is I would consider you an expert in, it's not medieval archaeology, is it?
No. So the Viking Age is an interesting historical period because there are so many changes happening. You start to get a little bit of writing from the Vikings themselves, but there isn't a ton. So it kind of straddles the divide between prehistory and history in terms of written accounts. You also get mass and relatively peaceful conversion of three modern day countries worth of people, conversion from kind of old, pagan religions to Christianity, which all happened around the year 1000. You have the development of towns. You have strengthening connections to the rest of continental Europe. You have kind of the evolution of, or the emergence of the medieval period towards the end of it. And that does also vary some according to where you are. So geographically, if you look at Denmark, for example, the Jutland Peninsula is attached by land to the rest of continental Europe, whereas Sweden and Norway and Iceland as well, you have to go over water. And some of those places are really mountainous, really inhospitable. Travel isn't particularly easy. That's why ships were so popular for people who lived in what we now consider Scandinavia, because getting over land could be incredibly dangerous and incredibly difficult. But that also meant that there were parts of the year where you couldn't sail. So the progression with which you see towns and like medieval institutions start to develop varies greatly across what people consider the Viking homeland.
Okay. So that was another thing. So we'll get into the show. Let's see. Let's just jump into the show, because then we'll talk about how there's a controversy here.
Sure.
So the show, you watched it. I watched it. A lot of people watched it. It was, we're talking about Legends of the Lost with Megan Fox, which is the newest Travel Channel show on history, as people like to see it. And we, the archaeology community, we knew the show was coming. Several of us on Twitter were a little apprehensive, some more so than others. I was kind of keeping my fingers crossed, hoping it wasn't going to be a total train wreck. And I can say it's not a complete train wreck, but it's not great either. And it wasn't received well by the public. It's got very bad view numbers, but I have been told by people who work in the industry that just because the numbers are down for the show does not mean there won't be a second season. So we could potentially, after the first four episodes, see a second season of the show. I have a hard time with the second half of the show. Usually the first 20 minutes of the show is pretty good. What do you think?
So I would also list myself as one of the skeptical individuals prior to the release of the show. And I don't even know that I was as optimistic as you were.
I was trying, man. I was trying really hard.
I'm impressed by that. But I will say I was actually pleasantly surprised. I would also like to preface that I have seen the entirety of the first show and I've seen about the first 25 minutes of the second show. So the comments that I'm going to make have no bearing on anything that she says in the second or third or upcoming fourth episode. Because I've heard some things that
we're not going to talk about giants
are yet. A bit bonkers.
Yeah.
So I would like to make very, very clear that the comments I'm about to make are only in relation to the first episode. But I was pleasantly surprised.
And just for our listeners, because I know I'm jumping around, the first episode of the season that is being put out was Viking Women.
Which is why I'm on the show, because that's my dissertation.
Why Chelsea? There we go. We've connected all of the dots now. Yes, Chelsea's on the show because I feel she's an expert in this topic, and it is the topic was Viking women historically, and more specifically, the knowledge of them historically. In just, you know, let's just go over the show. It opened up really well. I thought it was cool. The show is unique, and the reason why people get a little weird about it is because Megan Fox is both the producer and the main host of the show. And that has in its own right caused controversy because Megan Fox is a really weird figure in the public. Apparently she's very polarizing for no apparent reason in my mind. I don't particularly think she's a great actress, but I don't think that makes her the devil either. I mean,
well, and you know what? I'm a terrible actress. Like, that doesn't mean you can't do something else.
Right, exactly. I want to make sure, and I prefaced this in my blog post about the show, and I was very clear about this on Twitter. When I'm being critical of the show, and I am occasionally critical of Megan Fox herself, I'm not being critical of Megan Fox or the show because she's a woman, or she's pretty or not pretty, or she's smart or not smart. Or, you know, I'm not attacking her based on her outwardness because she is currently the only female host of any kind of, I think, show on the Travel Channel right now, which is kind of a remarkable thing. She's also the only female host of what I would consider pseudo-archaeology shows, which, I mean, as weird as it sounds, kind of makes her a pioneer.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to be like this, but it's true. It's a very male-dominated field. She's getting a lot of hate just because she's female. I don't think that's fair. It has no bearing on the topics of the shows. I mean, yeah, she probably picked women, female Vikings, because of that.
So actually, I read a very interesting interview that she did.
Okay.
That I will try and find a link and send to you to put in the show notes. But where she was talking about kind of the development of the show, and she pitched it to a couple different networks, and Travel Channel picked it up, but didn't pick up all of the ideas that she wanted and actually asked her to do, she didn't specify how many, but some things that she wasn't originally wanting to do when she was pitching this show. And okay. Based on some of her reactions to the information that she was presented with and the objects and the materials that she saw on the Viking female warriors episode or Viking women warriors episode, and how scripted that was versus the first 25 minutes I saw of the Stonehenge episode, part of me wonders if the Viking women episode was something that the Travel Channel pitched.
I read somewhere, and I don't know if I can find this, but I do know that the original episode titles as they were released way back at the beginning of the year there was supposed to be an episode about the Amazons.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got to the actual release date for the show and we got the final lineup, I noticed that the Amazon episode is not there, but it was replaced with a Vikings episode, which was not in the original list of topics, show topics. I will see if I can find one of the original articles. I'm sure if I go through Dave Anderson's feed, I can find it. But so there was a topic shift just from Amazons to Vikings, but there's still that female heavy episode. But
right,
you don't really see that, because I have watched the second two episodes, and you're not seeing that I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar kind of theme through the rest of the episodes. I will say Fox does, I don't know if she herself went out of her way to find more female authorities that she speaks to, or if it's just happenstance, but watching her show and comparing it to something like America Unearthed, which I've watched all the seasons of, there are more female, there's more female representation in Megan Fox's show than there is in four seasons of America Unearthed. So, I don't know. Take that how you want.
That's something.
It is.
And I think that she may have had interest in women warriors. There's definitely more of a mythological, dare I say, almost cultish idea around the Amazons than there are about women warriors in the Viking Age. I feel like that, based on the Stonehenge, based on the giants, based on some of the a little bit more spiritual ancient aliens, and she did say ancient aliens was a contributing factor in inspiring her to pitch this show. I think kind of public perceptions of the Amazons perhaps fit better into that wheelhouse than Viking women warriors.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned her,
but again, this is speculation. I don't know which episodes were.
Yeah, no. She's been interviewed several times and she's been interviewed a lot. And she has said that Ancient Aliens was, Eric Von Daniken is an influence on her. She speaks directly to Graham Hancock in the Stonehenge episode. She presents him as an authority figure in that. So she's familiar with the fringy world of alternate archaeology and alternate history. She's very much into it. She's a proponent of it. And I mean, she says a lot of the same things that the Fringe uses, like a lot of the dog whistles, a lot of the terms. So she may be the only female face that we get to see of this, but she knows her stuff when it comes to the Fringe world, which I think is important to understand when you're watching these shows, because like I've been saying, the first 20 minutes, the first segment, two segments, before you go to commercial breaks, I was impressed by how much archaeology and facts she manages to get into this show. Specifically the Viking episode, the things she got to see, and honestly, the way she presented them with the aside of her little comments, her voiceover comments, was actually really cool. Like, she had some amazing access, I feel, in this show. One of my issues with Megan Fox's acting is, she's not very emotive. She's not very expressive. And that kind of translated over into the show as well. So I can't tell if she's actually really impressed with what she's seeing or if she isn't impressed with what she's seeing, because she kind of has like a baseline and she doesn't really go outside of that, unless you mention magic and then right. She lights up. Like, she lit up when the idea of magic wands came into the topic, or like she's in a cemetery and she's in one of the cemeteries and she's being shown objects of wealth and status, and she's like, oh, I guess that's cool.
Yeah.
And then she gets shown this quartz that has been cut, and it's cool, don't get me wrong, it's not like any of these things aren't cool, but she gets shown this quartz rock, and the guy's like, this is evidence of trade. So like, he's showing it to her to impress upon her the importance of women were participating in trade, and her comment is, oh, it's like magic. And the guy's just kind of like, yeah, I guess, but sure, you could use it for magic, I guess.
Yeah. So I also find that highly problematic, because we do know a lot about the Vikings.
Not according to Megan Fox, we don't.
Right. Well, and And there are people who would argue that we don't. And some of that goes back to straddling that prehistory-history divide, where we know less about prehistory than we know about historic times because of written records or the lack of written records from the prehistory. And because so much of the rest of Europe had written records, and it had written records for over 1,000 years at this point, what is today Scandinavia is, in comparison to, say, the Roman Empire,
mm-hmm.
in terms of their historical documents, was further behind, I guess. They just weren't writing down the same types of information. So I think that because people have that comparison in mind, and because it is Europe, they think of it as being, you know, oh, we don't know very much because we don't know as much as we know about the Romans. But, like, let's be honest, we know a crap ton about the Romans.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that's necessarily a fair comparison, but it is a comparison that I understand why people make it.
Now, so you keep saying prehistory and history, and I just want to clarify for people on the show, or people who are listening, where is that divide happening? Like, I know, but where's that divide happening as far as researchers are concerned? When does it stop being prehistory and it starts being history?
Basically with the written record, which means it varies depending on where you are. Because history means that you have historical documents, right? You're not just looking at archaeology and material record.
Right. You've got written records in the voice of the people who were taking the records down.
Right. So prehistory in, you know, the U.S. versus Scandinavia versus, you know, Southern Europe versus China versus Australia, they're going to be different dates.
Okay. And we know that there was an alphabet of sorts that was being attributed or used by the Vikings at the time. But why they were using it seems to be kind of up in the air. At least that's my understanding.
Yeah. So we have the Futhark, and you have older and younger. And if you're familiar with runes, I mean, that's basically what it is. It's also called the runic alphabet. And we have found some economic documents, you know, like keeping track of buying and selling trade, which is important. We do also have standing stones. You have a lot more of them in Sweden than you do in Denmark. I specialize in Denmark. I know there aren't a lot of them in Denmark. I believe it's more in Sweden than either Norway or Denmark. 95% certainty on that.
I want to point out that we have none in America, just for the people who are going to argue with me that we do.
Right?
Go ahead.
The Kensington Stone is not real.
Not real. Yeah, no. None of the rune stones in America are real.
A modern creation. Right,
exactly. It is a physical object that exists in the real world. Beyond that, it is not real.
Right, right. Was a modern recreation. But, you know, those standing stones have oftentimes runic inscriptions on them. But, you know, it's this person erected this stone in memory of why kind of thing.
They're like place markers and boundary markers a lot of times, from what I understand,
correct? They can be place markers. They can be boundary markers. They can be gravestones, although not gravestones as you think of them today.
Right.
They can be markers of commemoration. This bridge was built by whomever.
Right. Built it. And when we see runic inscriptions on objects, like we have archaeological objects that have runic inscriptions on them, they're typically an ownership marking or a maker's mark, effectively. Or sometimes they'll be like a little bit of a, I want to say spell, but I don't know if that's accurate.
I don't know about spell.
Right. See, that's my thing.
I'm going to steer away from that. We do also have some lovely runic graffiti.
Yes. I love when they find that.
You know, Yorick was here.
And I've heard that they found they found a cave or something where they were finding basically dirty limericks written in runes on the walls or something like that. Like they were like clearly dirty limericks.
Yes.
So they did a lot with the writing. They just weren't like really great at keeping like a historical diary or anything like that.
Yeah. You start getting into some of the sagas and the Eddas that were written over several hundred years that were written in Iceland, that some people make a case are actually representative of what was going on in the Viking Age. Some people make the case that, you know, some of them are written several hundred years after the Viking Age. And even if it's people think that they're written accounts of oral traditions that have been passed on for generations or centuries. But that doesn't mean they're not influenced by the people who are writing them down, which is true. There are ongoing debates about how accurate those sagas are and how much stock you should be putting into them.
Historically.
I personally am of the opinion that while the exact facts may have been distorted by the telling and retelling of these tales by various different people, there is a grain of truth in a lot of historic, even like epic poetry. So an example being the Homer's Iliad and the Odyssey, right?
Right.
Schliemann, who was a terrible archaeologist, and I could spend an entire episode talking about how much I dislike him. So I'm just going to put a pin in it right there.
I want to be on that episode because I have a hate boner for him so hard. I'm not going to lie.
I think we should do a Women in Archaeology.
We surely should just hate on Schliemann.
That being said, they found Wolusa, which is the ancient site of Troy, but that is the name that it went by, not that Troy was the name the Greeks called it. They've found evidence of a 100-year war, not a 10-year war. Probably wasn't over the most beautiful woman in the world, whose affection was promised to Paris by the goddess Aphrodite for deciding that she was the most beautiful of all the goddesses and giving her a gold apple. Probably not. But it is an explanation for a series of historical events that were condensed to make it grander and more interesting. And I personally am of the opinion that the sagas are probably similarly couched in that you can't believe everything is 100% true, but some of the themes in them and some of the events that they describe, even if it's not with the exact cast of characters, or in the exact time frame that they describe it in.
Yeah, they're still describing something that actually may have occurred.
Exactly. I don't think you can just completely, throw them out. There are archaeologists who will disagree with me. But that's a hill that I'm willing to stand on.
I think any kind of record that goes back that far and is kept up that long, there's got to be something truthful to it at some point. But I feel like that point is so far back in history, I don't know if we'll ever find it in some cases. Big, big events are probably going to be recorded. And whoever the winner was is probably going to have a different version than whoever the loser was. That's just going to happen. But I don't think we should be using them as blueprints dictating what we do as archaeologists.
No, but we can use them if you have multiple lines of evidence that all seem to support the same story. I don't think that we should ignore the sagas or even the historic law codes, particularly from Norway, because they had earlier law codes that address women having power. And for over a century, archaeologists, academics, historians were finding reasons to dismiss and belittle this evidence that supports having strong women. And this actually, I warned you before we started talking.
I was going to say, before you start, let's go to break.
All right.
And that's fine. Let's go to break real quick. And when we come back, Chelsea's going to start chewing my butt.
Digging in a trench, monuments. Going to the pub when the
we hope you're enjoying this episode. Please be sure to check out the show notes at www.archaefantasies.com for further information about our hosts, guests, and topics in this episode. This podcast is listener-supported, and we appreciate every donation, either in the time it takes you to rate and share this episode, or monetarily on Patreon and Ko-fi. You can connect with us on the blog, by email, or on Twitter, thanks to all of our supporters. And let's get back to the show.
Dinosaurs, raise your trials as one will call. No, we don't do dinosaurs.
Everyone, and we are back, and just a preference, I wrote a blog post about the episode, and I took a very strong stance in the blog post that, unlike what Megan Fox was saying in her episode, that there's a grand conspiracy against female Vikings and their place in history, and that they are very unknown and not... Yeah, well, I mean, basically she was saying that they were not well known, and was implying that archaeologists and historians were basically trying to hide the fact that they even existed. I took a very strong stance against that and said that they are commonly known. And that is because I, in the circles that I run around in, they are well known. The idea of a female Viking warrior is not an uncommon thought with the people that I hang out with. Chelsea, being, again, I point out, our expert in this topic, does not agree with me, and that is fine, but Chelsea, go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm taking my lumps.
So, as I mentioned before the break, for over a century,
yes,
archaeologists, academics have been finding reasons to discount, dismiss, belittle, hide, obfuscate evidence of strong women in the Viking Age. And that's problematic for a bunch of reasons. So, I mean, it goes back to the Osberg ship burial, where...
And that was in the show. That was in the show, was it not?
Right. So they did show the ship, and it's gorgeous. And it is.
It is.
I just thinking about it, it's mind-boggling.
No, I was stunned when they had that on the show. I was just like, oh, man, that is amazing.
Right. It's basically the richest burial that was ever found. It was actually looted, which they didn't go into in the show. It was buried in 834 AD, and it was looted. There's an exact date for it. It's like a right around 1,000, but I can't remember the exact date. And unfortunately, it's going to take me too long to pull up the journal article.
That's interesting that they could pinpoint the looting date, though. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, it had to do with residue that is left behind. It's also not the only ship burial from that area that was looted around the same time period. And there are debates whether that was around the devaluation of the old religion, whether that was also a period where there was a single ruler who was consolidating power and they were trying to desecrate previous symbols of power in that area to show their own power. So there are debates about why that was happening. But when it was looted, in addition to, you know, like the skeletons being scattered, which is unfortunate, all or almost all of the metal was removed from that ship. So while one would expect to find jewelry or weapons or something, because it was looted, we don't have any of that. So, I mean, there are like a loom was found in the boat. There's a cart, there's a sleigh, there are several buckets, there's combs, there's...
The guy on the show did mention that they had recovered some weapons.
So,
or he alluded that they had.
Some knives. They recovered some knives, but they're not large knives. They're knives. They're not daggers. They're not short swords. And knives are something that are commonly used by both men and women, and you find in both male and female graves.
Yeah.
You know, because you would need to have a knife to cut your food, to do weaving, to cut, you know, spare thread off of your cloak that's unraveling. Knives are useful, full stop. Doesn't really matter your biological sex or your gender. So,
yeah, people carry knives today for that exact reason.
Right. So some of the artifacts that would have or could have been used to gender the individuals weren't there. But there are a lot of other, I mean, the burial is just incredible. There are so many other incredible artifacts in that burial. And when it was discovered, it was the largest and most well-furnished and equipped boat burial that had ever been found. And this was, you know, early 1900s. And then it was two women. And that presented a problem for the white wealthy men who were primarily, you know, the lead archaeologists of the day, or at least the ones who got to make a lot of decisions and got public acclaim, because we do know there were early female archaeologists.
We do.
But that didn't fit with their narrative. So there were, for over a century, attempts to say, first it was that she was Queen Ossa, who was very important because her husband was very important, and that he gave her this very rich burial, but it was only because she was married to the king. It wasn't because of anything that she had done herself. And then there were attempts to say that clearly they must have been some mystic priestesses who were involved in the old religion, so that they could have had power, but it was only in a very, very specific realm, that they couldn't have had political power. They couldn't have had, you know, physical or military power. So for over a century, you know, this burial, people have been trying to downplay the importance of this burial. I know this is going back 50 years, this next one, but I'm kind of trying to build a narrative for you.
That's fine.
In, I believe it was 1969, Barry Evison looked at a grave from Sonningbergs, and there was a sword projecting from, so that people were doing construction, and there was a sword projecting from some gravel in one of the machines they were using. They stopped construction, which, considering it was 69, is actually kind of impressive.
Right.
You know, they found the rest of the sword, because it was, they only had like half of it. He'd broken the sword. They found some human remains and some other archaeological objects, which included a bronze pin, a knife, arrowheads, and an iron fragment. Now, problems become apparent that the pins that they found in the grave look like they were attached to ring brooches or box brooches, which are traditionally female ornaments.
And the box brooch that we're talking about, were, if you watch the show, she is Megan Fox is handed one. These clipped onto the aprons of women, and so they are almost always a female artifact?
Yes, pretty much. Pretty much.
Okay, making sure.
So now you have a sword, and you have that has been ascribed to being masculine, and you've got a pin from a brooch that is ascribed to being women, and you only have one set of remains. And I'm actually not sure that the bones themselves were ever osteologically sexed. But there was, and this is important, your minimum number of individuals was one.
Right, right, okay.
But because you have...
I know where this is going now.
Male and grave goods that are traditionally ascribed to people of male and female genders in the same grave, what's happening? And, like, some of the theories that you see coming up around this are just, like, bonkers, right? That, like, one of the skeletons managed to survive in, like, decent preservation, and the other one, which would have, you know, presumably been buried very close by in the same grave, somehow was differently affected by the environmental conditions and completely disintegrated, maybe? I mean, like...
All the way.
I mean, like, I don't know if they were, like, watching too much Doctor Who and started, like, he'd swapped in and, like... Beat Me Up, Scotty, which I realize is not Doctor Who. I'm mixing my sci-fi metaphors here. But, like, and to be clear, like, neither of those things were actually put in the literature, but it wouldn't surprise me.
I think something that needs to be clarified just real quick is human remains, human osteological remains, bones, they don't preserve well unless they're in very specific conditions. And then if they're in those specific conditions, they usually preserve very, very well. So if you have a situation where you have two individuals and one individual survived, more than likely the remains of the other individual should have at least survived in some part. So to make the claim that one individual is near perfectly preserved and the other individual is non-existent is a very strange, if not ludicrous, thing to say.
Yes, that is a true statement, which is not to say that it is completely impossible, because, you know, weird things happen.
That's true, but...
But, like, it is statistically unlikely.
Right.
But so there's a whole bunch of stuff going on, 60s, 70s, 80s, around that. I'm going to jump forward again, because I don't want to bore you all by just going on ad nauseum about this. 1991, Judith Jesch published Women in the Viking Age. She's got an entire chapter on women warriors, roughly 30-ish pages long. At the end of that chapter, despite giving 30 pages of evidence, she's basically like, but I don't think that this, you know, could have actually happened. I don't think women were warriors. You've got the Historical Atlas of Vikings, which is a penguin book. which was published in 1995. Again, you know, women were not being portrayed as warriors. You've got actually Gardella, Leszek Gardella, who they have on the show, published in 2013 a 50-page, approximately, report on burials found in modern-day Scandinavia that were osteologically female but contained weapons. And this is a direct quote from page 307. Comes to the conclusion that, I quote, "The image of an armed female riding on horseback to battle with a razor-sharp spear in hand, or one where a woman stands in a shield wall along other courageous women and men, is indeed alluring and fascinating, but in my opinion, it is still too early to argue for its existence beyond the pages of the medieval manuscripts," end quote. So he does allow that, given more archaeological evidence, he may change his mind, but, like, you just provided 50 pages of archaeological evidence.
So here's my thing. Here's my thing going forward at this point, though. 95 is a very early date, or very mm-hmm. is early. What I want to say, late date for this. There was a lot of upheaval going on in archaeology as a field during that time, and I don't want people to think I'm justifying it. I want people to understand that there are things that were happening in archaeology at that time that may color a lot of that, mm-hmm. which is where my argument started to come out of, is that it was being noticed and it was being written about, if not acknowledged. But yeah, you're right. You are correct. It was not being released publicly. It was not being, but nothing really was during that time. It was a really shitty time for archaeology communicating with the public. I'm sorry, it was. And
no, it was.
So a lot of stuff that archaeology was doing, was finding, was thinking, wasn't being released to the public. So not in a conspiratorial way, not like, oh, we have to keep this from everybody. It was just not something that archaeologists thought about doing because reasons. And that, again, is a whole other episode. So, right. But I just want people to understand that's the atmosphere that's happening. 95 is a little late for that, though. That is when right. things really
so 95
should,
is late
started
for that.
Changing.
I mean, 2013 with Gardella. There's also The Viking Age, A Reader, which is, you know, an edited volume by Somerville and MacDonald, which... The second edition was published in 2014. Like, that's only four years ago. And their section on women, and granted, that's from more of a historical perspective than an archaeological perspective. Their section on women is not pro women warriors.
Okay.
Put it kindly. So, and while I do take your point that this evidence has existed and has been kind of brushed under the rug for over a century, it wasn't being, talked about. I mean, I remember being in middle school or, you know, around 2000 and learning about the Vikings and just like being flabbergasted because like my family is Scandinavian and my mother is definitely one of the people who read Between the Lines and would talk about, you know, Valkyries and women warriors. And granted, some of the stories that she told me are stories. But, you know, and that also like stand up and say that definitely influences me. Like there's a bias right there. But I remember learning about Vikings and the books that we were reading. Oh, well, women stayed at home and they took care of the kids and they did the sewing and the cooking, you know? And I was just like, wait, what? Like, this doesn't line up with the story that I've been told.
Right. It's the standard line of women's place in history. Like every culture that we were talking about. Yeah. So I was just like, boilerplate.
So even though there are particular pockets within academia that have been aware of, even if not like publicly talking about the fact that women warriors could have existed, and even though there are, you know, pockets of people who have grown up with the idea that of course women Viking warriors existed because those are the stories that they were told by their, you know, their families, and to be honest, in the 1800s Valkyries at like high class society, like costume parties were very, 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 very popular. And women who were petitioning for more rights at the time were kind of pointing to these older stereotypes. But so you kind of get two sides of the equation that have gone down in opposition to one another. But in terms of the academy, it's still very early days. And there's still a lot of pushback. I mean, in last year,
There's still pushback today.
2017 fall, when we found out about the Burka grave, Judith Jesch, who is an incredibly respected Viking Age scholar, wrote a blog post about, you know, how she didn't think that this was actually a woman warrior and that there were women warriors. And she did bring up some valid and interesting points about the fact that the Burka warrior was also found, you know, 100 plus years ago, that collections practices from 100 years ago were not the best.
So, but the genetic evidence,
your skeleton, the particular way. So she wasn't talking about the genetic evidence. She was talking about the grave goods and the skeleton itself were separated, okay, because they often store skeletons somewhere else because of the unique preservation requirements.
But then she's just making the argument of that the skeleton got mixed up.
Right, she is. And it's, is it likely? No. Is it possible? Yes.
Right, exactly. But so, as you said, first, it's probably not what happened.
No, it probably is not what happened. And she did use that kind of as a cog for her larger argument that she just doesn't think women warriors could have existed in the Viking Age, at least not en masse. So last year, one of the most well-respected Viking Age scholars had a big, big problem with, you know, the evidence from Burka. So within academia, this is still contested. And then when you go beyond academia to the general public, based on the schooling that most people get surrounding Vikings and talking about, oh, well, you know, you're in middle school or early high school and somebody's in a social studies class and they're talking about Vikings, like, that narrative is going to say women stayed at home, men went out and raided. That narrative also doesn't talk about the fact that Vikings were traders, that they were farmers, that they were settlers, that they weren't just raping and pillaging. So, like, that's a problematic right. narrative for a lot of reasons.
Yes.
But
yes.
But I did take umbrage with your statement that people know this because, like, certain people know this. Most people don't.
Okay, I mean, I'll give it.
That's my soapbox. I'm going to get off it right
now.
No,
it's fine. I mean, I see exactly what you're saying. I really do, because you're right. If we go back to the history books, honestly, I can't remember what I learned about Vikings in middle school. I cannot, for the life of me, remember. But I'm 90% sure if I picked up a middle school history book, if they even mention the Vikings, it's going to be, you know, a race of aggressive men folk who went out and took what they wanted and came back to their women, who might be mentioned, maybe might be mentioned. But I mean, if I read about the Romans, it's going to be the same thing. You know, it's a bunch of aggressive men who went out and warred their way across Europe and their women stayed at home and did stuff. We don't know what they did, but they did stuff. They raised children.
Right. So problematic narratives across the board.
Right. I guess that's my point there, is that, like, the narrative behind this whole Viking women stayed home and were good little housewives is true of every civilization we've studied because, well, history and archaeology are problematic. You're 100% right there. And yes, if I came off sounding like I didn't agree with that statement, then I need to go fix my blog post, I think. I guess my point was, and again, this is the circles that I run in. And I run in a really weird group of people because I'm a geek and I'm a nerd, and that just colors everything. Again, a bias. But when we talk about Viking women, it's almost always, you know, yeah, she may stay at home, but she rules the house and she knows how to use a weapon and she certainly knows how to hold a shield and, you know, that kind of stuff. And, you know, I don't know anybody in my circle of friends who would want to, quote unquote, fuck with a Viking lady because, like, she will murder you. And that's what I'm talking about. But I guess in the larger public, with people who are not reading history books and not getting access to history extracurricularly, probably they do have what they learned in high school, and that's it.
Sure. And I will say, I run in similar circles, socially and academically. Many of the people that I know are willing to consider the possibility, even if they are not Viking Age experts. But as someone who, like, my dissertation's topic is Vikings, I cannot tell you how many times. I'm, you know, at a networking event or being, you know, my friend has a, you know, house party or we're having a board game night or, like, whatever it is we're doing. And I start talking to somebody and I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm a PhD candidate. And they're like, oh, great. What do you study? And I'm like, how gender impacts the lived experiences of individuals in the Viking Age. And they're like, oh, my God, like, warriors raping, pillaging women at home. And I'm like, excuse me while I spend the next 10 minutes reading you the Riot Act, because, like, no. So because it's my topic, I talk to a lot of people about Vikings, and I can tell you that a lot of people ascribe to the traditional gender norms that have been, I think, unfairly applied.
I agree with you. I agree. I totally agree with you there. I think the I want to come back to the Burka warrior or Bitka warrior.
Yep.
Okay. I want to come back to that after we come back from break, because I think there's some interesting things to talk about there beyond the very disappointing writing about it, apparently. So let's go to break real quick, and when we come back, we'll continue talking about women biking.
Perfect.
Digging in a trench, monuments, going to the pub when the
We hope you're enjoying this episode. Please be sure to check out the show notes at www.archiefantasies.com for further information about our hosts, guests, and topics in this episode. This podcast is listener-supported, and we appreciate every donation, either in the time it takes you to rate and share this episode, or monetarily on Patreon and Ko-fi. You can connect with us on the blog, by email, or on Twitter, thanks to all of our supporters. And let's get back to the show.
Dinosaurs, rage your trials as one will call. No, we don't do dinosaurs.
Hey everyone, and we are back, and so we've been talking about female warrior or female Viking warriors, and we've been talking about Legends of the Lost, and I think we're mostly in agreement, except for the whole like how well people are aware of female Vikings being warriors, even is, and that is completely fair. But I want to go back to one of the more interesting finds that were discussed in the show. And that is the Bitka warrior, because I think it kind of pulls together everything, Chelsea, that you've been saying this whole episode. Because the Bitka warrior, am I saying that right?
I have always said Bitka. I know other people who say Bitka, but like people also say Bitka. So I'm going to go with like they're both acceptable.
All right. I'm going to stick with Bitka because I can remember that one. Anyway, so the Bitka warrior, and correct me when I say the wrong thing here. The Bitka warrior was one of the largest and best warrior burials that we had found.
Correct.
Okay. And when the Bitka warrior was discovered originally, it's a very masculine looking grave. There are there's spear points. There's a sword. I think there's two swords. There's axes. There's arrowheads. There's horses. There's riding gear.
Yeah.
There's quite a lot of really good stuff to...
So I've pulled up the 2017 report that lists the grave goods. So it's a sword, an axe, a spear, armor-piercing arrows, a battle knife, two shields, two horses, one mare and a stallion, and a full set of gaming pieces. The authors are indicates a knowledge of tactics and strategy.
Possibly. Or we just really like... Yeah, I know. Now, clothing-wise, does it mention what the individual in the grave was wearing?
I don't think it does, which is not surprising, considering, you know, cloth doesn't preserve that well.
Right,
I do know
right.
One thing that has been talked about kind of at length is that... kind of tortoise brooches that you would expect to find on female graves are not in the grave. And one thing that I just want to point out really quickly that I made a slip up earlier, because people talk about female Viking warriors. Female is actually a very gendered term.
Right, right.
We're talking
and that's
about
what I'm going to get into
here. So it's...
Yeah.
Right. So it's a woman Viking warrior. And finding... these kind of boxed tortoiseshell brooches have been taken to indicate femaleness. But that doesn't preclude that, like, you could have someone who is a biological woman who didn't necessarily adhere to that gender presentation.
Right. And this is what I want to get to with the Bitka warrior is the grave goods. Okay. The grave goods heavily indicate a male individual. And I recall When the skeleton was looked at, there was a discussion, a very brief discussion, as I recall, that the skeleton's morphology presented female.
Yes.
And at the time, it was written off.
I would actually argue that the grave goods... So two things. One, I would actually say that the grave goods indicate a warrior identity rather than necessarily a male identity, although it has certainly been assumed that warrior and male go hand in hand.
Right, and that's what I was getting at.
And the other thing is when this burial was originally excavated, there was a remark that the individual was slighter than expected, but bioarchaeology or osteoarchaeology, depending on which country you are, because the Brits and the Americans have different words for the same fields, that branch of archaeology was really still in its infancy. So when the individual was originally excavated, they did not, to my knowledge, conduct an osteological investigation that determined biological sex. They simply noted that the individual was slighter than expected.
And so...
But a more recent osteological excavation has determined that it was female or a woman.
Yeah, right, right. So we've got... And there's also been genetic testing done on the bones that... I don't know how they do it, but I will ask Jennifer Raff about it. But they have determined that the individual in the grave was biologically female. And I'm very careful saying that because my argument is the biological sex of the individual in the grave is not an indicator of how that person was perceived in society.
Yes.
Right. So
agreed.
So that person may have been a woman in society living as a woman of the society. I mean, I don't even know how to continue explaining that, but there's also the possibility of a gender that we do not understand today, don't even knew existed. And this, the Burqa warrior could be the example we have of this. Anybody who follows my show or the Women in Archaeology show know that gender is fluid. And it doesn't always align with whatever the sex of the individual might be. And I think because am I correct in saying there are no female-esque artifacts in the grave, in the Burqa warrior grave?
That is correct, to my knowledge. Again, I haven't seen the original reports. I'm going off of what's been published. So to my knowledge.
So it's understandable if you're just trying to gender the person based on the artifacts in the grave. It's understandable that they initially were like, oh, it's obviously a dude. But now we have evidence that biologically it's not a dude. That has really caused some issues in the academic sphere. And they trouble me. Because once the person was sexed as female, all of these stupid ideas started popping up as to why a woman, a quote-unquote woman, would be buried with such rich grave goods or buried as a man, a quote unquote man. And I'm just like, why does it have to be narrowed down to these two things? Like, it causes me problems.
So I have an answer to that question.
I have an answer too, but I'm not going to say it on air.
So my answer is academic and logical and totally safe to be put on air.
That's fine.
So when gender archaeology first emerged as a field, there was a big emphasis on finding women, right? Because women hadn't really been talked about. So
no, they were invisible.
Right. So it was actually kind of early gender archaeologists, you know, in the 90s, because let's also remember, archaeology of gender hasn't been around that long.
No. And that's why I wanted people to understand that shit was going down in archaeology.
Yeah.
Back when all of this crap was happening. But yes, keep going.
It was. But so early people who were focused on an archaeology of gender were really just kind of interested in identifying women and making sure that women were being talked about. And a very easy way of doing that is kind of to fall into the dichotomy trap. And we've moved into a time when we are talking more about intersectionality, about the possibility of intersex individuals, possibility of trans individuals in the past.
Right.
Which is... can be more difficult to identify.
Yes.
Black and white reasons. Is easy, gray is hard.
Right, exactly.
So I think a lot of the issues that you're seeing revolve around that. And I think the Burqa warrior is really interesting because and I struggle to say this, let me rephrase.
It's okay, I understand.
The thing that is being perceived as a competing narrative. And I would like to be very clear here that I do not think this is a competing narrative. I think that this makes perfect sense, that there's no problem with these two things existing in conjunction with one another. But the issue that is, or not the issue, the idea that is being perceived by some as competing narratives is warrior and biological female, which people are assuming to mean also having a female gender rather than just a biological sex.
Right.
That corresponds to XX. And I personally don't see any problem with someone having two X chromosomes who socially identifies as male, right?
Correct.
Who performs, right? Because we've talked about the fact, at least on the Women in Archaeology podcast, that gender is performative. It's the acts you take. It's how you dress. It's what you do.
Right.
I don't think that's problematic. There are people who do. I think that they need to get their heads out of their asses.
Right.
So I would just like to be very, very, very clear, because I realize that this is a touchy subject, that, like,
it is,
you know, biologically female, identifies as male, it's totally fine. But some people find that
difficult, problematic.
Yeah. You know, and from the perspective of women warriors, you do have someone who is biologically a woman who's a warrior. So, you know,
right.
It exists. That is different than a female warrior.
Right. And I think because the larger discussion around the Birka warrior was not presented in Lost Histories, Legends of the Lost, I think the impact of the discussion wasn't there. And I don't know if it was just, is it just not a discussion that's happening academically, that the Birka warrior could be a representative of a person who is living a different gender than their biological sex? Is that just not a conversation that's being had?
So it is a conversation that's being had. I've actually heard from some of the people who were on the 2017 article that they chose to use the term female because all of the original reports ascribed the male gender to this individual based on the grave right. goods, and that they thought it was important to make the point that even though this individual is in a grave filled with what is typically or traditionally viewed as masculine grave goods, that, like, there's no reason that someone who had a female gender identity couldn't also be buried with.
That's true. And I don't want people to think that.
So there is a point, and I think actually the way that they've done it has inspired a lot of conversations. I mean, we're having a conversation on the show that hopefully people will listen to and learn something from. There have been conversations happening academically as well. Some of them are more civil than others. Sometimes it becomes difficult if you are talking to someone and they're, oh no, well, this is impossible, and I'm going to get really angry. It is tempting, and I have been tempted myself, to kind of dig your heels in and say, no, I'm not going to talk about the gray. I'm not going to talk about the complexities of this, because I don't want to necessarily give this person that I'm arguing with a leg to stand on, because I think that the argument that they're making is sexist, which in some cases it is. I haven't had very many of those conversations, and one or two of the ones that I have had have not actually been with archaeologists. They've been with, you know, general members of the public who don't have as much knowledge surrounding the subject. I mean, the people you meet at networking happy hours, let me tell you.
Yeah, no, I understand.
But so the conversation is happening, but I think it's a conversation that when the article first came out, there were some blog posts, there were some rebuttals, but the kind of refining of concepts, the dealing with the complexity of it, I think a lot of that right now is happening, not necessarily behind closed doors, because people are willing to talk about it, but it's happening within academic circles. And I wouldn't be surprised if in the next couple of years, there was another paper that came out kind of as a result of all of these discussions that are currently happening that does address the complexities in, like, a much more nuanced manner.
Okay. So, and then to me, it's, I don't know, I guess, again, it's a bias, it's a personal bias. I don't understand why we can't, as a field, just be like, okay, yeah, this happened. And this could be an example of it. I do want people to understand, though, the Birka warrior is not every female warrior burial that we've discovered. There are clear evidence of, I hate saying it this way, but there is clear evidence of male artifacts and female artifacts being found in the same grave. And that, to me, I think speaks volumes towards this whole idea of the female Viking warrior. A couple of the things that Megan Fox went to on the show were, one was a mass grave that was at the end of the show. And about halfway through the show, mm-hmm. they were in, I believe it was just a regular burial ground. And in both locations, she was spoken to by professionals who were participating in, if not leading, the excavations. And she was being shown evidence of, I'm comfortable saying, evidence of women performing masculine activities, but they were clearly women. They were found with the tortoise or box brooches. They were found with the amber beads. Mm-hmm. They were found with distaffs or other articles that are considered feminine, but they were also found with swords, axes, shields, things that we, for whatever reason, only associate with men. And that, to me, says that you wouldn't bury somebody with something that you didn't think they would be using in the afterlife. That's just not how this stuff worked.
Right.
So if I'm burying somebody with an axe, I obviously expect them to be using it, or at least it's associated with them in some aspect from their living life.
Well, and there is a whole other podcast that we could do talking about assumed afterlife beliefs of the Viking Age.
That's true, too. I mean, there's only so much I can do here. I'm not an expert. There's only so much I can do.
No, that's fine. And I realize that, like, the podcast is only so long. I could literally sit here for the next, like, 3 weeks and just talk nonstop, and everyone would be so bored and they would hate me.
I would be enthralled because I love this shit. But yeah, no, I mean, my assumption is, if you're putting something in the grave of a person you're burying, it's because it had some significance to either the person or to you. And if you're putting multiple weapons in the grave of a woman, it's probably because she either was using those weapons or you're expecting her to use them in the afterlife.
Yes. Although it is important to remember that the dead do not bury themselves.
That is true.
So some things that end up in graves, with exceptions of like people like Ötzi, who died in...
Ötzi, yeah.
Right? Like, he was in a mountain.
He did kind of bury himself. Left.
Well, the mountain buried him. But like, he was buried with what he lived with. But outside of those kind of rare exceptions, grave goods don't necessarily indicate how the person felt about themselves. They may indicate how society felt about that.
That's true.
Which may also mean that you have individuals who show evidence on their bones of having led a more violent lifestyle or a more strenuous lifestyle, that because family members wanted them to be, you know, gendered one way or perceived one way, that they're buried in that way, even though that may not have been.
But this is where the mass grave, this is where the mass grave is important.
Yes, Repton is very interesting.
Because the mass grave is, we didn't get too many like in-depth details, but the mass grave is a war party or a combat party of some variety that was buried together. And there are female remains inside of there. It was suggested in the show that the female remains were being found in association with weapons.
That is true.
And that is true. Okay, so that there to me really kind of backs up. Because the graveyard one... more importantly, being found with the women in the graveyard one was also weights for weighing goods, scales for doing the weighing and measuring, and other items that indicated trade, which this is something that, Chelsea, you've brought up a few times in the show itself. The overall perception of who the Norse and the Vikings were is very not right, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, in general, the people are not being presented the way they actually live.
I mean, the Vikings, the raiders, had an outsized impact, right? Like, they stole, you know, 10 times their weight in gold.
Right, right. We're not saying that didn't happen. I'm just saying there were other things that were going on.
They changed fortifications. And that impact has left, like, a lasting mark archaeologically on geography. I mean, like, it changed the political might of what is now England. Like, the reason that we have the history we have in England is because the Vikings came in and decimated some of the kingdoms that comprised the country that is now England, and allowed rulers who were not that strong and probably would not have survived to have their culture, have their political system come to prominence. Right.
That's interesting.
So it was, I mean, the Vikings had a profound impact. But Viking, you went a Viking, it's a verb, right? It was a thing that you did.
Right, exactly.
It wasn't the entire culture. And many people may have gone and done a season or two of raiding to get the money that they needed to set up the farm at home or to fund settlement elsewhere. It's not who they were.
Right. As a culture, they were traders. They were farmers. They were normal people, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
And I do think also, as important as it is, we're talking about women warriors, right? And Gardella had it right. It is an evocative image.
Right.
And it's an image that makes you question. And if you question that, I would like and hopefully think that there would be a trickle down, although I haven't seen a ton of it, that you should question other things. But like, there could be women traders. We have women, biological, you know, women graves that are found with trading implements. Women could be farmers. Women could do these other things. And those conversations are happening. They're not quite as prominent as the women warriors because, again, evocative image. I want to say broader, acceptable social gender roles.
Right. And I want to say that these images are only evocative because of the society that we live in.
Oh, 1,000%.
We as a society have decided that women are docile, women stay at home, women take care of children. I mean, my friend likes to call it the cult of the baby. I mean,
I like that, the cult of the baby.
Well, I mean, come on, seriously.
No,
when was the last time
like
you were
it.
How many days has it been since you were asked when you were going to have children? I mean, that's my point. And so we as a society have decided that that's an evocative image, but there is absolutely no indication that that was what was historically was considered that way, unless you are outside of Viking or Norse society. And yeah, the Romans were terrified of women rushing them because we know that the Romans weren't really fond of their women. So having a woman come screaming at you with a weapon and some armor and a shield, I mean, that's probably scary as shit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, and I mean, when I said that the image was evocative, I was
No, I understand what you were saying, 100%.
Modern.
Right.
You know, what the modern image evokes, not that the Vikings would have found that to be particularly unusual, because they may not have.
Well, we have no idea. So, all right, this has been a great show. I love Vikings. I say that more often than I say anything else, really. So I enjoyed this immensely. Thank you for coming on the show. Do you have any final thoughts about Legends of the Lost or the topic in general that you can squeeze into 5 minutes?
Sure. So, I mean, I think it's important to be open to the possibilities, because as we've been discussing for the last hour plus, you know, the reason that there are debates happening now is because people for a century weren't open to the possibility that women could be more than homemakers. That being said, I also think it's important to be willing and able to discount theories that there is no support for, that there is support that goes exactly counter to what you think it is, you know, or think it is you're saying. And I'm not speaking so much particularly for episode one talking about Viking women, because I really wasn't that upset by this episode. Or at least not as upset as there were things I was upset about. They weren't, you know,
right,
the defining.
Right. The actual point of the show was interesting. Her like, I'm going to go sit out in the woods. Yeah. Okay, cool. I'm just going to skip this 20 minutes.
I mean, go sit out in the woods. I'm sure that there were viewers who thought it was interesting and that they engaged with, but knowing some about like the giants and the Denisovans and what's coming, that worries me. So I would like to say for anyone who is watching this show, just because I didn't hate this episode doesn't mean that there aren't serious problems with later episodes, and that you should do your own research and be willing to discount things that have been proven.
Ask an archaeologist. Just seriously.
Untrue. Yeah. Throw my Twitter handle in the show notes for this. Come at me.
Come at me, bro. All right.
I mean, like, please don't. I will answer in like well-researched.
Chelsea's very, I just want to say this. Chelsea's very, very good at remaining professional no matter what's going on. And I have always admired this trait of yours. Like, shit goes down and Chelsea's like, hang on, let's think about this like adults. And I'm like, no, I am not an adult in this moment.
Well, thank you. But yeah, if you're interested and you want to know more, you know, if you're interested in reading more, I can certainly send you suggestions for books and articles to read, people to follow on Twitter. There's actually a whole, it's like the Norse Gender and Queer Society. Yeah. They're really a neat interesting
group. Yeah.
They post some good things. But yeah, so be open to the possibilities, but also be open to dismissing possibilities if they aren't worthy of consideration.
And also be aware of your biases.
Yes, be aware of your biases. That's a very important one.
That is my lesson for this episode. Be aware of your biases.
You know, and if you see something in the show that you think is like really, really interesting, like go find a book about it or a journal article, like something that not just a blog that could be written by any crazy person in the world.
Hey now.
Hey. Not talking about your blog. You know, but if you're reading a blog and it's just an opinion, it doesn't have
Absolutely correct. Yes.
You know, like, just do your due diligence. If you're interested, check it out, read more about it, but make sure the sources that you're getting it from are informed sources, not, you know, alt-right people with crazy biases or...
if they're not citing their sources and they don't have multiple sources, they're probably not reliable.
Do good research.
That's all I'm asking. Right? Just cite your sources, do good research.
Not just for archaeology. For everything. You want to post something on Facebook, you know, retweet something, do your research.
Yeah. Yeah, because that shit will bite you in the ass. Trust me, that's happened more than once. So, all right. Well, Chelsea, thank you so much for coming onto the show. The Women in Archaeology podcast is doing great. So if you guys want to hear more of Chelsea talking about a variety of topics, including gender and her research, check that show out. And we should be expecting a book from you when?
So I'm hoping to finish my dissertation in about a year and a book sometime after that.
Sweet. All right. But I was just going to poke you on that one.
Some articles in the new year as well.
Excellent. All right, and I will be posting Chelsea's Twitter and the Women in Archaeology blog in the show notes, so feel free to reach out and nicely ask questions. And yeah, thanks everybody for coming on, and Chelsea, thank you again for being on the show.
Oh, thank you so much. This was great. I absolutely love talking about this. It's my favorite thing. It's why I'm doing a PhD in it.
There you go.
Extrapolating from a single stone the extent of a whole complex and then publishing it.
If you'd like to support the podcast, consider donating to us on Patreon or Ko-fi. Either option helps us out. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on the blog www.archiefantasies.com and like and share us wherever you can. You can follow us on Twitter at archiefantasies, or you can reach us by email at archiefantasies@gmail.com. That's ARCHY fantasies@gmail.com. Theme music was provided by ArchaeoSoup Productions. This episode was produced and edited by Sarah Head.
No, we don't do dinosaurs. We don't do dinosaurs. See? Are you happy? Do you get it now? Do you get it? Honestly.